Let me start off first by saying thank you so much to everybody who has been listening to my podcast and to those who voted for me for the podcast awards. I was a semi-finalist and a finalist. Alas, I did not win, which I know that I should be proud of. Hey, I've managed to start a podcast and be nominated within 6 months, but I'm unreasonably a sore loser. I'll grow up eventually. There is still time. Anyway, so I'm going to try something new here and talk a little bit about my skincare and specifically what I do for my skin. If you go to the show notes, I will have all this listed for you. So don't worry about pulling over if you're driving or dropping Sparky's leash to make notes. I got you. I would say probably my most frequented asked question is about my skin and what do I do? And in the words of my vet last week, what did you do to your face? You look younger. I had makeup on that day for a bit of a change. I know I'm a makeup artist, but I don't always wear makeup. First of all, in true transparency, I have not been without various aesthetic services over the years, which I'll drop into the show notes as well. To name a few, upteen facials of various kinds, RF and hydrofacials are my faves. Thermage, mesotherapy, alt therapy, multiple peels, Botox. I've never had fillers. I have never seen anyone with a filler that I have liked. No judgment if they are for you. I was lucky when I was living in Singapore as I had a friendship with an aesthetic doctor who occasionally gave me a gratis treatment because of the amount of clients she gained from my constant recommendations. And if you're listening in Singapore, Dr. Kumati at the Lifestyle Clinic is the best. Unfortunately, I have yet to find my person in Toronto. No one has blown my mind here yet, unless you count the nurse who injected the wrong muscle, causing my middle brow to sag, Cro-Magnon style. I mean, that was kind of blowing my mind in an odd way, and fitting as a red-haired Neander. Thank goodness I could rock a fringe, and Botox is not forever. Anyway, on to at-home skincare. I do look for pharmaceutical-grade active ingredients in my skincare as they have a documented effect on the skin, often with a healing treatment-based benefit. Pharmaceutical-grade refers to a level of purity and quality, and this is why I look for skincare with these ingredients. My skincare steps don't always include everything, and by that I mean sometimes I'm simply using my cleanser and moisturizer, and other times it's a 12-step process. Here are my top shelf skincare products. And just to note, no one has paid to be on this list, but I have received packages from various brands in the past. So if they've made it to the list, it's because I truly love them and I see the benefits for myself. Okay, number one on the list, makeup remover. Bioderma micellar water for sensitive skin. I love this for gently removing makeup and it doesn't clog your pores. It's non-oily. I use this in my kit as well, my professional makeup kit. I love it so much. It's really great. Cleanser, Dermalogica Special Cleansing Gel for washing my face. And I believe in the double cleanse, which means you wash your face and then you wash it again. Exfoliating is one step that I'm surprised that many either never do or do incorrectly. Exfoliating helps remove dead skin cells, so your skin absorbs all of your skincare better. And honestly, if you have dull skin, bumping up your exfoliating routine probably will reveal a healthy, radiant skin. Avoid any harsh facial scrubs that have apricot seeds or the like. They are incredibly abrasive and destroy your skin and your skin's protective barrier layer. This is a rule for all ages. It's not the 80s anymore, and we know better. The only time I'd say recommend this is like, you know, if you run into someone who has been mean to you and they compliment your skin, tell them how much you love apricot seed scrub and you use it every fucking day. But for you, regardless of the exfoliator, do not use it every day. So my exfoliant recommendations would be Dermalogica Daily Microfoliant. Okay, so I know what it says, but in my opinion, do not use it daily. And Skin Inc's Oxy Recharge Bubble Mask. My faves. Last time I was in Singapore, I stocked up on the Skin Inc. And I'm ending my reserves now. Masai. Toner. Okay, I literally have multiple on my shelf. First, if you still have Seabreeze, girl, you're as old as that product. Throw it out. Toner should not be an astringent. We don't want to burn off our protective barrier layer. Toners help to target and calm the skin as well as add hydration. QMS Medi Cosmetics Hydrating Toner is my preferred at the moment. Note that if your skin is feeling tight when you cleanse, you may need to revamp what you're using at home. Your skin should never feel tight and sore when you wash it. It's a good time to mention that if you have any skin issues, it could be hormones, it could be related to barrier repair needed. Honestly, there could be a plethora of things, even change of season, even allergies. So it's good to see a dermatologist or a skin therapist. Don't ever try to self-diagnose your skin by reading fashion magazines or, God forbid, listening to some bloody TikToker talking about skincare. Oh, shudder. Please don't do that. Please, please, please don't do that. Serums. Okay. I know I'm probably sounding high maintenance now, right? Rhetorical. I am. I know. I get it. Okay. I love me a good serum. I always reevaluate mine when I finish a bottle in order to target my needs, as our skin's needs do change. It can change with season, stress, climate, hormones, and so on. My favorite serum is the Daily Dose by Skin Inc. They have a bespoke bar where you can add in your desired targets. Licorice, hyaluronic acid, and Q10 was an Andrea Claire classic, but they are in Singapore and hard to ship to Canada. For a less of a bespoke kind of tincture, but more accessible, The Ordinary has fantastic options. Remember that serum goes under your moisturizer as it won't absorb through your creams, and your creams really help to lock them in. My go-to moisturizers are Dermalogica Skin Smoothing Cream, Love, and QMS Medi Cosmetics Collagen 3D Cream. These are fantastic for skin that is dehydrated, losing elasticity, and collagen. And don't forget your neck. That is so important. I feel my savior has been in the fact that I would get facials often and the facialist would work on my neck. Otherwise, I'd be giving real serious Christmas turkey neck waddle right now. Christmas because I'm an upmarket turkey. Eye creams. So I'm a lover of pharmaceutical grade ingredients, as I've stated, but I do love the Supergoop Bright Eyed Mineral Eye Cream that has an SPF of 40. They do have actives in this eye cream, but honestly, I'm not sure if they're pharmacy grade. And at this point, I kind of don't care. Like, I'm okay with that. I do really like the Supergoop one. Sunscreen. And yes, if your foundation has sunscreen, you still need a separate one. Stop asking dumb questions. No, just kidding. There is no stupid question. Doesn't matter what my grade 10 English teacher said. He also hated my shoulder pads. Fuck him. Kula Classic Face Sunscreen, fragrance-free, SPF 50. I love their spray-on to reapply over makeup. Or my latest fave is by Eucerin. And I'm always wondering if I actually pronounced that brand name correctly. Anyway, Eucerin, anti-shine control face sunscreen with SPF 50. It's a mattifying sunscreen, and I love this because of the mattifying properties. It started off actually my male grooming kit, and it made its way into my personal arsenal. And this is really great for people if you feel that you have oily skin, definitely, or if you like a glowy makeup but you don't want to have like layered of like lots of glowy products on, then the mattifying sunscreen is perfect. And your sunscreen is your last skincare step before your makeup. Now, I do use various masks for deep calming and hydration in the form of sheet masks, gels, creams, etc. I won't list them now, but I will add a few of my faves into the show notes. Sheet masks you can use daily, and then a deeper mask generally depends on your skin type, but once a week is definitely perfect. I don't use any powder on my skin. And people cringe when I say that, but and they say, like, I don't want to look oily. The thing is, if you're using proper skincare for your skin type, you can control your oily skin. Most who use powder overdo it because you see the oil and you're like, oh my God, I need to powder that down. But when you powder too often, you're actually telling your sebaceous glands that your skin is dry and it needs to provide more oil. So then you're kind of creating this endless cycle of oil production on your skin. The other thing that I find with powder is it tends to dull the skin because it builds up. And I don't care if you're like, I use X product and it doesn't do that. Yeah, it does. I'm sorry. I hate to tell you, but yes, it does. Too much powder on the skin too, especially if you're reapplying through the day, it starts to kind of make you look kind of flat, pale. It fills in all the fine lines. So you start off, you know, say in the morning looking like you're 38, and you know, by the time the afternoon rolls around, you're looking 60 because you're putting on too much powder. So lady, put down that powder. Oh my gosh, I need more sleep because I get silly when I have not slept. Yeah, I guess I have some other makeup tips, but I figure like let's save makeup for the next one. In the meantime, feel free to DM me with any questions, even your dumb ones. Yeah, I mean, there's no dumb questions because asking questions show that you have a level of intelligence and you're open-minded and you're interested in learning. And hey, let's be interested people.
Welcome to the Fuck You 50s, the podcast for women who refuse to tolerate the bullshit anymore. This is real talk, real stories, and a long overdue reality check. I'm your host, Andrea Claire, and this podcast is the filter-free voice you've been waiting for, with a dose of F-bombs. The Fuck You 50s, unfiltered, unapologetic, and undeniably needed.
Ode to the Gemini. Yep. It's another twofer episode. My guests today are sisters in blood and no blood. Sorry, that's a really tasteless menopause joke. Anyway, Sandra Flores and Kelly Bruce are Uruguayan Canadian sisters supporting each other through the ups and downs of life. Sandra is a Toronto-based actor who holds a Bachelor of Arts in Drama Studies from Glendon College, York University. She is also a Second City Conservatory graduate. She is a mom to a brilliant 16-year-old daughter who is also a kick-ass drummer. Sandra's most recent credits include Law and Order Toronto, Sky Med, and various voices on Wynonna Earp, Tales from Purgatory. Kelly is a business manager at an eco-conscious consulting firm in Toronto and a mom of two very successful adults. Forever friends, they share much in common as they navigate through their 50s. We discuss the 80s influence of fad diets the adults around us got into, which included wrapping up in saran wrap under jogging suits to sweat off the LBs, how their Uruguayan elders wanted the younger generation to color their gray hair because it made them feel old, Sandra's menopause hot flash experience on set shooting a scene with an A-list actor, and more. Up now, Sandra and Kelly, welcome to the Fuck You 50s. Thank you guys so much. It's so lovely to see you both.
Lovely to see you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you on my podcast. I really appreciate it. So Sandy and I know each other from, I almost said from school, but our daughter's school. So Presley, Sandy's daughter, and my daughter Zoe go to the Etobicoke School of the Arts. They're both in grade 11. And so we met kind of, you know, just I guess as being parents. And Presley is in film and Zoe's in musical theater. And now they're both also in a band together.
I can't wait for the show that we're allowed to go to.
Okay, no offense, but enough about our children because this is about us. What's I love our kids, but you know,
Pushpin. Moving on. They're called Pushpin.
Pushpin.
Just, Pushpin. Yeah, Pushpin the band. Okay, yeah. There. Enough. Moving on.
What is it that?
What I love is that Sandy and I are both like we're both in the industry and we're both like taking the role of like stage parents like really really well, right? And Kelly, I guess you could be a stage aunt, right?
So I'm just gonna close my window.
Yeah,
because I can hear the traffic. And I can't hear properly.
We're rock deaf from the 90s.
Okay. For me, it was always the 80s love music. I used to like at dances and things. I don't know why, but I would always go and stand like right in front of the speaker. Like that's like, I don't know. Did I think I was cool or something? And then, I mean, now we're a hearing aid in my right ear. So, I mean, they said it was an autoimmune disorder, but maybe it was like the 80s like speaker.
Yeah, I carry earplugs everywhere I go.
Yeah. So smart, yeah. So smart. So Sandy, tell our listeners a little bit about you, and then Kelly, don't forget, we'll jump into you too. But Sandy, give us a little breakdown about what you do.
What I do, besides mom-ing, I do acting, which I absolutely love. I went to university for translation and ended up in the theater, and I wouldn't leave, so I walked out of there with a drama studies BA instead.
I didn't know you went through for initially for translation.
Yeah. Well, when I first wanted to go to university, my parents were like, why? You're just going to get married and have kids.
They were expecting you to have your MRS degree.
Oh yeah. There was no going to university. The only way I could really talk them into it was telling them that I wanted to go to Glendon College, which is York University's French campus, because I was in French immersion and so spoke French. And they're like, okay, then, you know, and my dad was in the print industry and the kind of, he's like, well, that sounds like a potential job. Yeah. So I went and I didn't get into translation. I failed the entrance exam for translation. And at that time, when I met my advisor, who was the head of the theater department, and saw my transcript, he's like, why aren't you in theater? And I said, I didn't know I could do that. So he's like, well, yeah, you can. So I stayed with my parents still thinking I was working on my translation degree. And then when I left there, it was really hard to, they don't teach you about auditioning. They don't teach you about the industry at all. I was I wasn't at a typical theater school. I was at like an academic school, right? So it was more about the history of theater. Even though I did get to act, there was a lot of acting. There was a lot of production. I learned everything from lighting to stage managing to just the production to building sets. Like, we did everything.
Cool.
Yeah, then it was really hard to audition. It was hard. I did a few plays, but it was really, really hard. So I stuck with music. I could play guitar, I could sing. So I did my singer-songwriting years. And then not until Presley was 4 and in school full time, because it was full day, did the universe come back again and said, you know, I have an agent for you. So a friend of mine said, we're looking for a Latina. I know that you want to get back into acting. Do you want to go for this? It was like one of those, what do you call it? A docudrama, like a reenactment kind of show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Paranormal Witness. And so I went in and I auditioned, and the audition was mostly improv. And I did it. So after university, I did keep doing stuff. So I did go through Second City. I went through the conservatory because I still wanted to keep it up. I took stand up. I really enjoyed the performance aspect of stuff. Yeah. So I went in and I did the audition and I booked it. And then I went that same day, half an hour later, not even, went to meet the agent who sent me there, and she signed me, I guess. And then here we are 12 years later. 12 years later, I've been with Terry is her name.
So what's the math on that? So how old were you when you kind of got back into acting kind of more full time?
40
like math is hard.
40 something.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good answer. Let's stick with 40 something. That's good. and then Kelly, so you're working for an eco-conscious?
I am. I'm currently working for a company that is trying to save the world by making, helping, I guess, owners and building managers, make their buildings green. So it's a bunch of, engineers.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what I'm doing currently.
Nice. And then you guys grew up in Toronto? Did you grow up in Toronto?
Yeah, we were born and raised I was born and raised in Toronto, right? My sister as well. She came very young, but always in Toronto.
And then, and your background, so you're like, Uruguayan. You're Uruguayan. Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, perfect.
You can remember that by an episode from The Simpsons where Homer spins the globe and he lands on Uruguay and he says, "Look, you are gay." So there you go.
Amazing. Okay.
Yeah. That's how Uruguay's claim to fame.
So do you guys find, like, growing up, did you have a lot of influence from your Uruguayan background?
A little bit. I feel like they really tried to be as Canadian as possible so that we could fit in. So took on traditions that we don't do in Uruguay, like Thanksgiving and Halloween and things like that, that, you know, they don't do. So, but they hopped right in there. My mom was always trying to learn English, always taking classes. What else would you say about that? Oh, well, the Club Uruguay. So there's this community that would have picnics and dances. And I was even in a beauty pageant. They made me go on a beauty pageant for Miss Club Uruguay.
That's amazing.
And so they did try to keep that type of culture available to us. But as you got older, you know, and you could say, no, I want to stay home, they wouldn't force you to go to those things. But at home, it was always Spanish.
Yeah.
We always spoke Spanish at home. Our grandmothers would come to visit from Uruguay. Eventually, they ended up moving here. So, and they only spoke Spanish. So, yeah, they did try to keep the language for sure. And a lot of the food, of course.
Yeah, definitely the food.
The best empanadas are Uruguayan empanadas, I'm just going to say.
They are.
So what's the difference between a Uruguayan empanada? And I mean, I guess how many different cultures do empanadas?
You know, it's funny because when you go to one of my grandmother has passed now, my mom too. But when you'd go to their, the El Club de los Abuelos, which is like the grandparents club, and they would have these dances to raise funds for their trips and such. And they would have a list for the menu and there'd be empanada, but like, I don't know, about five or six, if not more. And then the country next to it.
Yeah.
So that you would order whether it was like the Colombian one, the Mexican one, the Argentinian and Uruguay is similar. Some people, they just put different things in them.
It's the dough.
And,
really.
And the dough.
I make them. I don't think my sisters ever made them.
I made them once because the dough is difficult to make.
Well, that's nice. Passed down like the... And there was this a recipe that came kind of from your family as well? Or is this,
yeah.
And Kelly, you do remember my address, right? So
yes. I'll send you some of my empanadas.
The Uruguayan ones are baked. That's the difference too. They're baked,
okay.
Whereas some of the other countries fry.
And are there different like heat, like for temp, like the, like some are spicier than others or not really?
Yeah, that's the thing. You can do like whatever you want inside.
Yeah.
And me being a Canadian Uruguayan, I made a leftover turkey one.
Oh yeah.
So it had all the turkey fixing leftovers. So it's really your own creation, but I still use my mom's dough.
Whatever we can do to use it up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
My family was always turkey soup and my grandmother made the best like homemade noodles. And so I love that. And I've kind of taught my kids how to do it, although they want me to make the noodles. So.
And my husband's from Newfoundland and my son, he loves to cook the Uruguayan food. So his last empanada was a Newfie mix. It was a Jig's Dinner empanada, which Jig's Dinner is like a staple in Newfoundland. It's like cabbage, potato, salt, beef. And he made empanadas with all of those fixings. So
the only thing I know about Newfoundland is like, isn't that where you can kiss the screech or something?
Yeah, kiss the cod.
Yeah. And drink the screech.
Oh, fun. So do you guys have any like from your upbringing, is there any kind of cultural traditions or kind of like thoughts towards aging that you've kind of grown up with? Or do you find that it's more kind of Canadianized in that regard?
I do know when I started to let my hair go silver, the ladies had a problem with it for sure. And I think it's because it would make them look older.
Huh, that's so interesting.
I have a feeling that might have had something to do with it, but it was always, you know, you have to look a certain way for the men's. Right?
Yeah.
And the men aren't going to like that.
Yeah.
Our mom was constantly saying, you know, you can cover up those grays.
Yeah.
They look so lovely.
Yeah. And I remember like, oh God, I don't know how many times we would see her walking around with a bag on her head because she was doing her roots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not until late did she let it go.
Yeah.
Oh, how old was she? Maybe in her 70s? Did she finally?
Yeah, I think so.
She gave herself a really short haircut, like a pixie cut, and it looked so good.
Yeah.
And it was just all kind of salt and pepper, and then she just let it grow out that way.
Wow, gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know the other thing about aging, like traditionally for hair, my Danish grandmother called her Famwa, which is Danish for father's mother. And she had fine hair. She didn't have a lot of gray, so she didn't color it. She would rinse her hair with chamomile tea. But it was almost like tea staining her hair, which is interesting. But she liked to get a perm. And my grandmother also always had poodles. And when I became a hairstylist, she wanted me to perm her hair. And I personally do not like perms. And so my grandmother was literally the last person that I
permed somebody's hair for. But I remember saying to her, like, Famwa, why do you want to look like your poodle? And it was actually after that that she decided to no longer perm her hair. So that's good. I feel like, I, you know, as we're getting older, it's like, you know, you see so many people that are embracing their gray and silver and natural textures. And I always say it's like to each their own. But Sandy, mm-hmm. your hair is like stunning. So I want to touch base on your acting and just like a lot of the roles that you've played and just kind of over the years, like how have you found it being in this industry on camera and getting older? I mean, I've caught you on a couple of the things that you've done and you look great, but do you feel any kind of like pressures of, you know, you see women that are getting things done and just how do you feel about that?
Sometimes I think, oh, if I could afford it. But I do find, so I've been doing it for just about 12 years. And in the beginning, I found that it was always Latina made, like all the auditions were all very much like that. Now it's changed completely. You see a lot of BIPOC. They want to see a mix of cultures, which is amazing. So I've been able to go in for different things. But when I went in, I did a show where I played the aunt, Latina aunt, and they put a wig on me because she wouldn't have her hair this color. So they put a really huge wig on me. It was so big, I named it Loretta.
That's really great too, just the capability now, because I know like years ago, you would be asked to color your hair for a part, right? Whereas now the fact that wigs are so much more accessible, and I want to push you to tell it in your own words, but you're telling me the story about this A-list actress that you were in a scene with.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So this was, we were in Montreal and doing The Glass Castle was the name of the film. And it was so hot and it was being shot in an old hospital in Montreal that they don't even use anymore and didn't have any air conditioning, and they would run in these huge, I don't even know what to call them.
Yes. So they're like industrial air conditioners.
And I was in high menopause at that time, and they would give you these little, because everybody was hot, they'd give you these little handheld fans that you would hold between takes or whatever. And they have me also in, I was in a wool dress and a sweater and a wool cardigan.
So a menopausal nightmare. You were in the middle of a menopausal nightmare is what that was.
Plus the heightened excitement of being on set. And I was on set with Woody Harrelson and Naomi Watts. Those are the scene partners.
Amazing.
And Naomi saw me and she could see what was happening. And she did something that I couldn't do. I'm almost going to cry about it.
Mm-hmm.
Aww. She asked him to take a break. She said, we all need a break right now. Because she knew that I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. I can't believe how it's affecting me, but it was so beautiful that she did it.
I mean, it's such a great story. And you know what? She's known for being such a strong voice for women,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And, yeah. And so that's amazing that she saw that. And yeah, because... You're right. Like, you know, when you're, were you a day player or were
you
to be like a smaller part on a film set, you can't yell cut.
No. Yeah. She was fantastic. I love that she did that. And coming from a theater background, we always do thank you cards at the end of a run. So I gave cards to everybody that I worked with, from hair, makeup, everybody. I give them a card. And so I gave her a card and I thanked her for that.
Oh, that is such a, yeah. When you first told me that story and I was, I think it was then where I was like, will you please be on my podcast and tell the story? So, do you find like if you're on set with people that are having any kind of struggle that you're also kind of there for that person as well? I would just imagine that you would be.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Whether it's menopause or whether somebody is PMSing. I was with somebody once who was, it just seemed really out of character for them to be so upset about something, like to the point of crying and just being really, really hard on themselves. And so they stopped, they asked her to step outside, and then they sent me out to talk to her. So I went out and I asked her, when's your period? When was your last period? And she said, it's supposed to be tomorrow. And that's why you're like this.
Yeah. And just, yeah, for sure. Like understanding what you're kind of going through. And I know when we're going through like perimenopause and menopause, it's probably a bit more of a roller coaster that we're going through. Plus we're having to deal with like so many things around us, but you guys have each other, which is great. You guys seem to have like a really great, strong, like sisterhood. So how do you find the support like with each other?
Oh gosh, if I didn't have my sister, I don't know what I would do. She's my biggest support, really. Yeah. You know, after losing my mom, our mom, I felt the menopause, all the symptoms just like came like the day after she passed. I felt like all of a sudden these hot flashes were coming and it was horrible. And no one really talked about it to me, really. You know, I had been seeing my doctor about issues for a while. Now I'm putting it all together that it was always, you know, perimenopause. And so after my mom, and I can just hear my mom always, she never really talked about it either. All she would say was, you'll see, you'll see. So it's really sad. But I have my sister. She's like great support. She's always there for me. And it's amazing, right? And even for us now, I find I'm being more open, right?
Mm, yeah.
Because my sister, I'm sure she's been through this a bit longer than me, right?
I'm 4 years older than my sister.
Yeah. And so I'm just learning all of this and I'm like, wow, I've been through this for a while. And I actually just started HRT. So hopefully it'll help me.
It, you know what, it's great though too, because not only do you have each other, but it's also, there is a lot more conversation that's happening, you know, like not even just, I mean, my podcast isn't necessarily about perimenopause or menopause, but obviously all of my guests have like a little bit of a story to tell, which is great, but just to kind of have that conversation that's out there.
And it was kind of sad too, because they would belittle it, right? In our family, the Latin side of it would, if somebody was acting out of sorts, they would say, oh, la meno, like she's got the meno, you know? Yeah. So,
or mental pause.
Or they would, it was always.
It sounds so nice though with that accent.
La meno.
Yeah. But we've always been super close, always. Yeah. My sister's always been there for me. She helped teach me walk, talk. So,
yeah.
We have a really close bond. And I think it's just getting closer now that, you know, our family's getting like, lost their mom. And she's a real big support for me, and I hope I am
vice
for
versa
her.
Oh yes, she really is. Yeah, Kelly's a huge support, and was with Presley when, because her kids were grown, she was a huge support with Presley, definitely.
It's so nice, you know, I have a couple sisters, but we don't have that tight relationship, unfortunately. You know, it's sometimes feel a bit envious, you know, when they see you guys together or they watching some show and they portray like sisters just like being best friends it's so nice to see.
Whenever I hear somebody is like one of my daughter's friends now is pregnant, I'm like, oh, I hope they have another girl.
Yeah. My mom too was a big pusher of girls whenever anybody's pregnant. I hope you have a girl. Yeah. And I think too, my mom really pushed the sisterhood in that she didn't have siblings at all.
Yeah.
And so she really would always remind us, you know, that you're not, your friends, your sisters, your family, like it's important not to take that for granted. So she always kept us really conscious of that for sure.
Yeah.
And there were times, you know, like, that we separated for a little bit. It was whatever the 90s when I moved downtown or whatever, and Kelly was having kids, but we always still stayed in touch, always.
And now we're extremely close with our daughters. My daughter is my best friend, and your daughter is your best friend too, right?
Yeah.
That's so sweet. Kelly, how old's your daughter?
My daughter just turned 30 in February.
Big wedding coming up.
Yeah.
Oh, how's that?
It's exciting. It kind of feels surreal. Like it's, you know, it's not really happening. But this past weekend we went and did some food tasting at the wedding venue. So now it's like, okay, this is real and exciting. And I'm really happy for her. Her fiance is great. His family's great. So really happy for this next chapter in our lives, I guess, more memories, but really happy.
And we try and keep all that, the menopausal, the hormonal stuff open with the girls as
always.
Well.
Always.
Yeah, like always. Don't hide it. Don't. Yeah. This is a hot flash. You know, like.
Well, you know, it's crazy because I've been doing more, of course, research and everything, and even just with perimenopause, like that can actually start in your 30s. I learned recently, which
I
didn't even think that it would start that soon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's crazy. And it's
just you could say to your daughter, "Congratulations on your wedding. Now prepare yourself for
perimenopause. It can happen any day."
Yeah.
Oh wow. So, Sandy, anything coming up for you? Do you have any big projects coming up?
Hopefully, I've had a couple of auditions the last week. It is funny when I'm not working, I'm taking classes. This one girl in this exercise, you're just supposed to notice things about each other. And she said, "You're a lot older than I am." And whereas at one point in my life, that might make me sad. It might make me mad. And I was like, "Yes, I am a lot older than you are." I was like, just like, that's right.
And so you're like, and you better listen and respect your elder.
Yeah. And it's funny that we were talking about hair and being on set, how it's changed. So I did a Law and Order in Toronto, the Toronto Law and Order, and they did my hair twice because the person who did my hair first put it all, like tried to hide it all in like a bun or like a beehive-y kind of thing. And they sent me right back to hair and took it all out. They wanted it out. They wanted it just pulled back up on the sides, and they wanted to see it all. Which I thought was awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they should be showing it off. It's gorgeous. Well, I did catch it. Was that the one where you played a waitress?
Yes.
Yeah.
Waitress at the diner. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which on one hand you can understand because when like waitresses like typically would have their hair pulled up, but it's also like it's TV, so
yeah.
It's TV waitress hair. It doesn't have to be real.
Yeah. And I just before coming here, I got a check and it was for a commercial, a Walmart commercial. I love when that happens, something that I did a while back. And then I love residuals.
Oh, yes. Well, Sage, my eldest, she did a commercial when she was 10 for Nutella. And at 17, she was still getting some residuals.
Yeah. That's the same with a McDonald's.
Yeah. It doesn't always happen. So anyone that's listening, if they're like, "Oh, if I just get a commercial campaign, I'll get residuals." That doesn't always happen.
Yeah.
And you do voiceover work too, right?
Yes, I do. Yeah. And I can do it with a Spanish accent if you like it. I can do whatever you want me to do.
I love it.
And a book as well. I did an audio book where I get to say a few words in Spanish as well. But I do sometimes when I do a self-tape, if they are calling for a Latina, I'll do my second take with a Latina accent.
Oh, that's a good idea. Just
because
in case.
Why not?
Yeah, yeah.
And it does something different to the character. It makes the character a bit more ballsy, a bit more attitude. And if I can throw in a few Spanish words in there, whatever I need to do to get the job.
Yeah. Amazing. it's so great. And I just love that you guys are so close and you have like differences in your lives, like having different paths, but still there for each other. I think it's amazing.
Yeah. Very, very supportive of each other for sure. Yeah.
Do you have any advice for anybody? I mean, I guess it's almost like you could pretend you're speaking to your own daughters, like any advice that you would pass on to them as they're getting older.
I think something that we always forget is that we, and it sounds kind of selfish just to say it, but we are number one, right? That whole thing about how can you love someone if you don't love yourself? All those kinds of sayings about, there's something to be said about self-love. It takes you a long way in that there's self-respect there. You're more aware of yourself, your surroundings, of others, of how you allow other people to treat you. Just to really be kind to yourself. I think that is big. We sometimes forget that, especially as women, is watching my mom too, is that everybody came before her.
Yeah.
Right. Like everyone came before her, kids, her husband, yeah. and she was always last. And it's like, what, why?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be like that. And I find that I'm a better person when I'm a healthy, happy person. And that means taking care of myself. But I don't take care of myself, then I'm not a happy person.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I think definitely we have to put ourselves forward. I think too often we're kind of brought up, especially when we could become mothers, we're brought up to, like, you know, well, everyone else should go before us. Right. Yeah. So definitely, I think, I agree with you. I think we should be putting ourselves forward.
Me too, for turning 50s. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Me first. I have to go and do my yoga. I have to go for a walk. I have to eat healthy. I have to really, and that takes time, right? Yeah. Putting ourselves first. But if we take care of ourselves first, then we're great for everyone else, I find.
Is this something that you guys had to kind of learn? Like, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And totally. Is that?
Because our mother wasn't like that. Yeah. I didn't see her go to yoga every day or go for a walk every day. It was like my sister said, you know, oh, I have to cook dinner. I have to go to work after, you know, it was just that regime of, I don't know. It was awful, really.
Yeah, there was some times in that, maybe the 80s. I remember seeing her in a jogging suit, but made of plastic on an exercise bike.
Yeah.
Because of the whole body thing, right? You had to be a certain way. So she's trying to lose weight by riding a bike in plastic.
So yeah. I remember when I was... got the 80s for sure. I was not 80. I was like, it was the 80s. I'm just 54. But I remember my stepmother, and I think it was either one of her friends or maybe my step aunt. They had wrapped themselves. So I think they put some cream or something on their body first. I'm not sure what it was, but then they wrapped themselves with Saran wrap. Head to toe, well, maybe not head, maybe like, you know, neck to toe. And then they put a tracksuit on over top of that. Yeah, to sweat it out. That's like so crazy. And then the funny thing is, I mean, I want to say not funny, the fucked up thing is you would kind of drop a tiny little bit, but God forbid you have a glass of water because all that shit is right back on again. Like the things that we put ourselves through, it's like, it's insane.
Yeah.
And then it's funny because we remember that, right? We remember like seeing what, you know, family around us did. Like, and not even family, let's be specific. Like the women that mentors around us, like this is what we saw as our example, right? So I think it's great that I'm so sorry that your mother had passed, but it's also nice that you can kind of take away what you wish that she would have had, where you're like, this is the example I now want to showcase for my, you know, younger generation can see, like, it's okay to put yourself first and not sweat with a plastic bag.
Yeah, she was happy with us that we did, that we would do that.
Yeah, take care of ourselves.
At the end, she saw that this was really important. And it was seeing her not take care of herself made us want to take care of ourselves even more.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to go down that road of unhealthiness. Yeah.
Do you have any kind of new new hobbies or anything? I mean, you're talking, Kelly, about yoga. Have you guys always done yoga? Is this something new or?
For me, I guess it's been maybe 10 years, but it was actually my daughter that got me into it. She, you know, kept trying to get me to go with her, and I kept saying, no, I'm too old for that, you know, following my mom's footsteps, I guess. And she's like, no, mom, there's people older than you there. So that's how I got, and then I fell in love with it. But hobbies, I have to say, I just recently started painting again. I was always very artsy and
crafty.
Yeah. And so I'm getting back into that to help me in these later years.
She's painting these beautiful stones to put in her garden that are, that's gorgeous. And you've taken mom, my mom was an amazing seamstress. She would always sew all of our Halloween costumes and, you know, make our jeans tighter in the 80s.
Yeah.
So you have her sewing machine. So we're going to be having some sewing, sewing weekends, hopefully to show Kelly how to use the machine, and maybe that'll be your next hobby.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did find that yoga made a huge difference. I did just like regular yoga and then found hot yoga. And then that made a huge difference with the menopause and perimenopause. Huge difference.
So maybe our parents were kind of onto something when they were wrapping themselves in plastic. This is like a healthier version of that.
Yeah. Imagine having a hot flash covered in plastic.
Oh my God. I mean, some of the clothes you get from like some of these like fast fashion designers are like covering yourself in plastic. So
I'm wondering too, if it was around that time that she was going through perimenopause and couldn't lose weight, right? Because you put on weight so easily once when you start getting older. And I'm wondering if that was what she was fighting against or dealing with.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because like touching on that, and that's like, I've had, I think, I mean, I could probably count them. I think I've had 4 people ask me if I'm going to ever have somebody on to talk about weight loss. And I'm like, basically the easy answer is fuck no. I think if it's part of somebody's like journey, like absolutely, like let's like share your story. Or I would love to have a dietitian on just to talk about healthy eating. And I know that could kind of transpire from that. And just not even just healthy eating, but just like things like different foods that we can eat as we're kind of getting older that maybe are, you know, better for our bodies, whatever. But yeah, it's like the weight, like just the way our body kind of carries it differently as we get older, you know? That would be interesting if your mom was wrapping herself up in saran wrap or whatever the plastic that she was like using then, if that was part of the catalyst.
She was always doing the fad diets. That's
fad
for sure.
Diets all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was sad for sure. Yeah. And I noticed too with the perimenopause and menopause that I had to cut out some of my favorite things to eat and drink because it made a huge difference too.
Wow.
So yeah.
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 Oh, getting older. Isn't it like so much fun?
It really is.
It really is.
It really is. You start like you give less fucks. You really do.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of my favorite things.
That is my favorite thing. Turning 50 years, I no longer give a fuck.
No. Oh my God. I love it. I think that is a perfect point to leave on is like, we just don't give any fucks.
No. All the fucks are they're gone. Yeah.
Thank you guys so much. I really appreciate our chat.
Thank you. I'll drop off some bananas soon.
Oh, yes.
Please, yes.
And bus
and they can be spicy. I can take spice.
Thank you so much.
Thank
it was
so
great.
Much.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning in to the Fuck You 50s. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to follow and rate the podcast. And we'd love to connect with you on Instagram, so be sure to follow us at the Fuck You 50s. The Fuck You 50s is hosted by Andrea Clare and edited and produced by Bespoke Productions Hub. See you next time.